previously on Unsolved. Officer Schuyler even told one of the waitresses not to go out of town that weekend. She had plans to go out of town, and she canceled them because she was waiting for these investigators to come and interview her. But nobody ever came.
Well, it was heartbreaking because we knew something was wrong, but what can you do? You can't do that much of when you don't know for sure. You can't do that much of you try to help a little kid like that as much as you'd like to. And I mean, we did what we could do, but then that we couldn't do anything else.
But there was one person who wasn't going to give up on this clue: the private detective. For the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, I'm criminal justice investigative reporter Gina Barton. This is Unsolved Season 2, A Toddler's Death, A Tangled Trail. Donna Sutcliffe was one of the waitresses who said they saw Michelle Manders at the Black Earth Cafe 2 days after she went missing in October 1981.
Well, I remember them coming into the building, and the little girls, we all, it was weird. We had a weird feeling after they came in because the little girl seemed so scared. And so, I don't know how you'd say, kind of laid back, like she was looking for help, like she wanted to say something, say for help and stuff like scream that, but We don't know what was going on, but we didn't feel right about the whole thing.
At the time, Donna and her husband had 4 children. The youngest was about 7 or 8. So when a private detective looking into the case tracked her down about a year after Michelle disappeared, Donna wanted to help.
Our children were little at that time, and I know what I'd feel like if something happened to one of my kids. So it can happen to anybody. Nowadays, well, even back then, it was very freaky if it did happen because you just didn't hear of those things back then. They probably happened more often than what we even heard about.
Norbert Kraszewski was the private investigator. At the time, he was really into hypnosis. A lot of other cops and investigators were, too. And that was largely because back in 1976... a few years before Michelle disappeared, some guys kidnapped a whole bus full of kids in California, and they were caught after the bus driver was hypnotized and remembered their license plate number. I talked with an expert on hypnosis, Dr. Brent Patterline, at the University of North Georgia, and he told me that the early 80s was kind of a sweet spot for hypnosis, where a lot of people were thinking it was this great new way to solve crimes.
It was very popular because of those because a couple cases in the 70s and 80s, and then academic studies started coming out, and what they found is that people actually may remember more under hypnosis, but they also in your subconscious mind is also your imagination, so you're also more likely to make up things. It can be difficult to determine what is reality and what is not reality. I think it was by 1995, I would say that everybody kind of concluded that, yeah, we have to be really careful if we're going to use this, and people backed off from using it.
Back at the time when Michelle disappeared, none of those concerns had come to light yet. So when Kraszewski asked the 3 waitresses to be hypnotized, they all said yes. But it only worked on Donna.
He put me in a trance with going back, counting backwards. And I was looking at this watch or something, going back and forth or something like that. And he said, just relax and just keep watching good and start counting backwards for me. And that's what I did.
The 3 waitresses went to Milwaukee together for the hypnosis session. I couldn't reach one of them, whose name was Janine Paddock, but I talked with Rosie Schulting about it. I asked her if she was in the room while Donna was being hypnotized.
No. But we could hear. She was crying, and yeah, it was that was quite a day.
Krzyzewski had convinced Orville Kwami, a Watertown detective who was working on Michelle's case, to come and hear what the waitresses had to say. Like most people who have been hypnotized, Donna doesn't remember anything except the counting backwards. But Kwami was actually in the room taking notes while she was being hypnotized, and he told me about what happened.
Then he started a process in which he took her back in time. 8 years prior, and brought up an incident. Where are you at? She said, well, we're in Disneyland, and what was going on, and who was with her, and what they were doing, and how they got there. Went through all kinds of things, and then did like 2 or 3 days, just little questions about, you know, each a little time period there. Then he took her into took her forward in time and got to the restaurant on October 15th or 16th, or sometime in there. And he asked her what was going on. It was really a fascinating moment in the manner in which he had her describe everything. Like, she's standing there. What do you see over to your right? Well, there's this and that, you know, and she was very specific about what she could see.
Unfortunately for the investigation, Donna didn't remember anything helpful.
He just brought her up to describing the people there and if there were any children there and was there anybody unusual there or somebody that hadn't been there before. And no, she couldn't describe anything that matched Michelle and these elderly couple that were supposed to have been there.
Krzyzewski was really hoping the hypnosis would help the waitresses remember what kind of car the couple was driving, the license plate number, which direction it was headed, something that would be helpful. But when that didn't work, he turned to a police sketch artist. And I asked Rosie what the sketch artist did. Like, did he have a book for her to look through and pick different parts of the face? Or, you know, what did he do?
I think he did. I can't say for sure, but I think he did have something to maybe sort of go by a little bit. And then we could adjust things if we thought it should be a different way, you know, or maybe the nose should be more tipped or whatever.
Rosie can still remember what the couple looked like.
She had bushy hair. If I remember correctly, it was sort of black. And she wasn't an attractive woman at all. At least not what I call attractive. Sort of a big woman, and he was a little man.
The man had red hair and a reddish complexion, and he wore glasses. The woman was about 5'10 and weighed about 150 or 160 pounds. Once that sketch was done, Krzyzewski sent it out to the media. While he was waiting to see if anyone recognized the couple, he went to talk to Terry Mueller. I talked with her, too. Her guardian, Pat Hansen, sat in on the interview. Terry Mueller was a friend of Jan Manders, Michelle's mother, and the two of them had met a few weeks before Michelle disappeared. Terry had some disabilities, and Jan had offered to teach her how to sew. So the night that Michelle went missing, earlier that evening, Jan was teaching Terry to sew in the living room of their home.
You know, strap-on skirt? Mm-hmm. She was going to make me a wraparound skirt.
Yeah?
Yeah, she made me one.
Okay.
That night, she did.
What? You were sewing it together?
Yeah, we were sewing it together.
So you were making the wraparound skirt, and then what happened?
Then we stopped, and she put Michelle in a rouse bag and stuff.
When Jan went to sleep, Terry was waiting for her husband Joe to pick her up. And shortly after Michelle disappeared, Terry told the police she had opened the door for Michelle. And even though Terry had schizophrenia that sometimes caused delusions, the investigators took what she said so seriously that they allowed it to totally change the course of the investigation. So after she said that, the FBI left town, and everyone pretty much decided to go with the explanation that Michelle's death was an accident. More than a year passed before Michelle's mom hired Krzyzewski, and he went to talk to Terry. At first, she told Krzyzewski the same thing she told the police, but then she dropped a bombshell. Krzyzewski has passed away, but we have some of the letters he wrote to the Watertown police. Those letters describe what Terry said next. Here are some excerpts read by a narrator from our newsroom.
As you know, it took Terry Mueller over a year to come forward with the information. That 5 minutes after she let Michelle Manders out of the back door of the Manders residence, a mystery vehicle pulled into the driveway. She just stood there for a minute and watched the vehicle. Then she walked slowly back up the porch steps and into the back door of the Manders residence, but all the time keeping an eye on the vehicle. It was just standing there with its motor running and its lights on. Before walking back up the steps, however, she told me that she saw Michelle Manders looking out the back window of the vehicle.
Terry told Krzyzewski it was a large white car. She couldn't see the driver, and she couldn't tell if anyone else was in the front seat. The only thing she saw was Michelle in the back. Terry hadn't told the police anything about this car. In one of his memos, Krzyzewski explained why.
The reason she told me that she did not come forward with this information previously is because she is very much afraid of the police or of any law enforcement authority for that matter, which includes the FBI. She merely advised us that the reason she didn't mention it before is because she was afraid of the cops and didn't want to be hassled by the cops anymore, nor did she want Joe to be hassled. And she has been holding this inside for some months now.
Krzyzewski said he knew about Terry's disabilities, but he didn't think they were affecting her ability to tell the truth about what really happened.
I'm not a doctor, but in my opinion, and in the opinion of the agent who was with me, we were of the same opinion that Terry Mueller was not trying to exaggerate or fantasize this episode. She seems to trust me, and I believe that when she told me of this information, she was being honest with me. If in fact this is true, and she swears it is, then this would shed an entirely new light on the investigation.
Investigators believed Terry when she said she opened the door of the Manders house and let Michelle out. But they didn't believe her when she said she saw the white car, or when she said she saw Michelle in the back of the white car. I wasn't sure why they would believe one of her statements, but not the other. So I asked Detective Kwame why they didn't follow up on the lead about the white car.
I don't, there was never anything able, anything to substantiate that. I remember vaguely that remark. But there was no way that could have happened under the circumstances because she unlocked the door. She proceeded off the porch and down the driveway, I think a few yards, because she stated that Joe was didn't come all the way up in the driveway. And she ran to the car and got in the car. Michelle was still in the house at that time because the door had been locked since earlier in the evening, and Jan had put her to bed. So there was no indication that she'd ever walked out of the house prior to the time that Terry left the back door. Okay, and just nothing to substantiate that at all.
It didn't help that Terry gave this new information to Krzyzewski, who did not have a lot of fans in the Watertown Police Department. The police chief at the time, Richard Reynolds, told me he found Krzyzewski really annoying.
Yeah, we had a meeting with the district attorney that guy. Don't remember too much about him. He just appeared to be making a nuisance of himself. I mean, there was nothing that we had to prove anybody was guilty of something, only that the girl was assumed to be walking out on her own.
But Kruszewski didn't think Michelle had just wandered away and drowned. He thought there was something more to it. So he told the Watertown police he wanted to try and have Terry and her husband, Joe, get hypnotized. Terry remembers talking to the private detective about it.
I said, okay, I'll go over. And then Joe said, don't let him do it. I said, why not?
What did he say when you said why not?
He said, I probably won't live. That's what he said.
Here's an excerpt about that from one of Kruszewski's letters.
Joe Mueller was not too keen on the idea of hypnosis because he has an exaggerated opinion that it might be hazardous to one's health. But I assured him that to my knowledge, there is no case in medical history where a person either died or was seriously injured physically or mentally because he or she was put under hypnosis.
The other thing Kruszewski was trying to figure out was whether hypnosis would even work on someone with intellectual disabilities like Terry. The hypnosis expert I talked to, Dr. Patterline, said it wouldn't.
There's a couple studies that show the more intelligent you are, the more likely you are to be hypnotized. I don't know if that's true or not, but the whole idea with hypnosis is that you have to concentrate on the hypnotist and follow instructions. So usually forensic hypnosis usually say, do you know what the IQ of this person is? And it's below 72 or 76 or something like that. They usually won't hypnotize the person.
When I talked with Terry recently, she couldn't remember whether she'd been hypnotized or not. I don't have any records saying that she was, so I'm guessing she wasn't. She also couldn't tell me much about the white car. She's living in a group home now with several other people who have disabilities. You may recall from an earlier episode that it's a pretty chaotic place with 5 dogs and lots of other activity going on.
And the other thing was about this white car that was around the house.
Yeah, it was a white car. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. So do you remember that? No, you just remember hearing about that?
Well, I thought I saw the white car. And
okay.
So did Terry really see a white car? If she did, was Michelle in the back seat of it? And if those things were true, how would they fit in with what the waitresses said about seeing Michelle with the couple in the restaurant? No one could figure out how everything was connected, or if it was. And the police in Watertown didn't put a lot of stock in the clues Kruszewski was uncovering. But then Kruszewski released the sketch of the couple and the story about Michelle being in the white car to the media. After that, Chief Reynolds decided to reopen the case. He sent some officers to Black Earth to talk to the waitresses. Rosie told me the cops from Watertown didn't really seem to take her or the other waitresses seriously.
So, I mean, the whole thing, it was quite an ordeal because you don't know if your people believe you or don't believe you or think you're off your rocker or what. I don't know. So, and then it's, well, why would they ever stop here? Well, I don't know. I can't answer that. It was as if they were always trying to trip us. You know, like we were, I mean, why in the world would we make something like that up? You know, and it just was very disgusting.
I don't have most of the reports about that, but one of the documents I have from the Department of Justice mentions it. It says that the Watertown police tracked down this couple and they thought these people were the ones in the sketch. The report says this, quote, "The couple did live in the vicinity of Black Earth at the time and stated they could have been in the restaurant with one of their 33 grandchildren. However, the couple did not remember specifically if they were." That seems to be all the Watertown police did about the sketch. Michelle's mom, Jan, told me she also went to the Black Earth Cafe. And she says one of the waitresses was there, and she talked with her about seeing Michelle that day. But she can't remember which waitress it was.
No, I just went to just go see the feel of the restaurant, take a look at it. I just wanted to see where she might have been seen last.
So in talking to this waitress, how certain was she that she had seen Michelle, and how certain are you that the little girl she saw was actually Michelle?
It almost seems as like there's no doubt in my mind from what she described that it was Michelle. I was so, that sure of what she was saying. And what she was saying about her almost fit Michelle to a T.
When you were talking to this waitress, what was her demeanor like? Like emotionally, what was she like? How did she feel about everything that had happened?
She was so sure, and she herself said why something wasn't done. She questioned it herself. Why did they send someone out to come and check what they're saying out immediately? A little girl's been abducted. We think she's in here. Why don't you come out here? And she seemed like she was as stunned about it as I was. I know action was taken at that time.
I asked Rosie what she thought when she got the news the police had ruled Michelle's death a drowning.
A bunch of bull. That's what I thought. I mean, it just didn't, nothing added up. Just didn't add up. I mean, why would they suddenly find her all of a sudden when they've been looking there before? I mean, why? She had to have been put there.
I asked Rosie if Michelle's death was something that stuck with her over the years.
Oh, it was. Oh, I still have her little picture. In fact, if I would have had another girl, it would have been named after her. It was just heart-rending to think that this had to happen, and I just have the feeling we could have stopped it, but too slow. We were just too busy, and we'd look, you know, and we were just too busy. It was just one of those things.
Just when it seemed like Krzyzewski had hit a dead end, he got a call from a woman who said she recognized the man in the sketch. He wasn't a grandfather from Black Earth. He lived in Watertown, and he was a convicted child molester. Next time on Unsolved.
At the time, it looked like Rust-Oleum was smeared inside the truck, on the seats and on the floorboard. But thinking back on it, I feel like it possibly could have been blood. My daughter's cleaned it out.
Yeah, she said she smelled the bodies out at the farm. That's what we referred to it as, the farm. And she said she smelled the bodies out there. And then she said that the fleas were constantly following her around.
From the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, this is Unsolved, A Toddler's Death, A Tangled Trail. Support our independent investigative work by subscribing to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Find the latest offers at jsonline.com/subscribe. You can find more online at jsonline.com/unsolved. Subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. Unsolved is reported by me, Gina Barton, and produced by Katie O'Connell. The project was edited by Greg Borowski, with web design by Aaron Coy, photos by Mark Hoffman, graphics by Lou Saldivar, and video by Lou Saldivar and Bill Schultz. Our copy editor was Debbie Davis, with social media outreach by Emily Risto. Andrew Malika worked on interactive graphics.